All right. All right. Okay, guys, let's get started. So last time we talked about the Y86 instructions. We looked at the parts of the instruction. So we looked at the bytecode, which kind of helps us distinguish what type of instruction we're looking at. We looked at the second byte that was telling us the registers that we had associated with the particular instruction. And then we had the last 8 bits that were telling us either the immediate or the destination to load from or jump to in memory, or the constant to load into a register. So any questions about opcodes from last time? Okay. And then we mapped this opcode into, we went through and we did some encoding where we could go ahead and look at each instruction. And we looked at exactly how those instructions get translated into ones and zeros that are a part of our ISA. We also talked about this notion of state. So we said that Y86 had a particular state associated with it. So we said there were 15 registers in our new instruction set. And we said that register 15 is missing. We said that we don't use any of the smaller parts of the register, so we assume the entire set is 64 bits. And we're only focusing on the zero flag, the sign flag, and we're omitting the overflow flag for simplicity, and the book doesn't use the carry flag at all. And then we said we had this extra sense of state, which was, or stat flag. And so this would have the status of the register, whether or not it was halted, or whether or not it received some instruction that wasn't correctly encoded. And there are a bunch of other stats for that particular register. We also had the program counter, and so this tracked the current instruction that's being executed, and we had main memory. And so these were the things that were permanent in our, that represented the state of our instruction set. And so in order to implement the state, we need this whole concept of registers. So there are a couple of things that I want to point out with registers. So this is the program counter register, and you can think of this line here as being the input line. And that input has some value that's on it. So say, for example, this is going to be 0x1. And this is the output line. So say for example, this represented 0x0, so that was the value 0. So on this output line before the rising edge of the clock, it's going to have 0x0. One of the key things to point out here is that the all the logic that we're going to look at in this class will be rising edge logic. So that means that transitions, changes, happen on the rising edge of the clock, which is here. And we'll think of the distance from one rising edge to another rising edge as a cycle. So we'll say this is one cycle. So if you look, this is saying that at before this rising edge, the output value was 0, 0. Then as soon as this rising edge occurs, this input value of 0, this value that's stored in this register of 0, 0, gets updated to 1. These kind of shady regions here, that just represents that it's waiting to stabilize. So it's not perfectly stable at that point. And then after the rising edge, the input is again stabilizing. And so here you might have some new value, 0, 2. And then after that rising edge, the value in the register now gets updated to 0, 2. So any questions on this rising edge style logic?
What is the stabilization exactly?
So normally, like for more complicated circuits, there'll be things like rise time and fall time associated with the register. Also, as new values get put on the wire, those values kind of conflict, and so it takes some time for the value to like stabilize, that value of one or zero to like to set to its one or zero state. And it's a collection of wires, so it's multiple wires. So it's like the stabilization time. So stabilization time associated with the register hardware itself, rise and fall times, and then stabilization time associated with the wires. They're called setup times. Any other questions? I think I'll try and scan these and make these available. So recall that we have all these states from before. And so for each of these state components, we can actually go ahead and have physical components that encode those states. So here is the physical components for each of these. So the registers, there's a register file. And so this register file will map and store all those 15-bit registers. The zero flag and the sign flag get stored here in this particular register. Data memory, main memory, is here, this main memory location. Instruction memory isn't kind of shown here. The program counter, this is the PC memory. And instruction memory here is going to hold a list of instructions that we're going to execute. And so these are kind of a schematic representation of the physical hardware that would implement each of these features. So let's take a look at the PC. So the PC is the program counter, and so this is going to hold the address of the current instruction being executed. So if it's going to execute the first instruction, let's just assume that the PC counter always starts at 00. So this would be an address that maps to the first instruction in the instruction memory. And then 01, that's the next byte. So the PC is going to, you can increment it however you like, but the instruction memory is byte addressable. And so each of these values in the PC represents a particular byte in memory. So let's look at a kind of an example of the instruction memory. So if you look at the instruction memory here, you can imagine this as having a collection of bytes because it's bytes addressable. And say we had some instruction, like a halt instruction, which is just 00. So at byte 0, it holds 00. Next one at 1, maybe I should make these like this, so it's hex for consistency. Then the next one is a no-op, and so on. Say a jump is then, it will be held at 0x3, x4, and so on. Does this make sense? Any questions on the structure of the instruction memory? Okay. And so then you have the register file. And so the register file, this is where all the registers like RAX, RBX, RCX are going to be stored. And it has a couple lines. We'll go through them in detail in a later slide. But it has a bunch of read lines where values to be read will be passed in. Has a bunch of write lines where the address for the value to be written would be passed in, and write lines where the data to be written is passed in, and read lines, or the data lines that have the values that are being read out of the register. And finally, we have the data memory. And so the data memory, this is where your memory to register moves will be, and your register to memory moves are coming from this data memory. And so this data memory will store it could store parts of the instructions, it could store whatever you'd like. So let's talk a little bit about timing for these. Is this too loud? No, okay. So let's talk a little bit about timing for these. So here's your memory, and so it will take some, your instruction memory, so it'll take some address. So let's say the addresses are byte addressable, so I say give me the value at address 00. So say my instruction memory looked like this in byte addressable format. Sorry, I'll move this over here. In byte addressable format. So this would be 00, 01, 02, and no up. Sorry, halt, no up, and maybe a jump. So on. So when the address comes on as 00, the data that will come out here will be 00. And so you can imagine this as your address input. So this input would be your address value, 00, and your address output. So it takes some time to get the value out. But at the rising edge of the clock, that value is ready. So in this case, this would be 0, 0 for the data out here. If the address that was in was 0, 1, the data out would be 1, 0. If it was 0, 2, the data out would be 7, 0. Any questions on this instruction memory? Okay. So you can imagine just some address line here. And the cycle before, the address was 0, 2. And then at that clock cycle, then my instruction data line. During the same cycle as before, as soon when that memory gets set up, there's some stabilization time, but that value 07 is going to be available within that same clock cycle. So this is really important. Even though register files update on this rising edge, the data from the instruction memory is available during that first clock cycle. So any questions on this?
Is it like a latch where if you change the what's coming in, it also changes, or is it only written?
So yeah, so okay, so that's a good DLD question. So it's more of a flip-flop.
Okay.
So the clock is kind of a barrier for storage of state. And for all of these memories with the except, well, all these memories, the instruction memory and the data memory, we're going to assume they're combinatorial, which means during the same clock cycle, that data is available. So we don't have multiple clock delays. Any other questions? Okay. So we could also have a data memory. And that data memory can have unique lines that are associated with it. So we could have an input write line, an address line, a write enable line to decide whether or not we're writing or reading from the memory. So a write enable, a read enable line. We could also have a single line here that represents write or read enable, where we could pick arbitrarily 0 or 1 for a write or read enable. And we could have a data output line that contains our output value. Okay. Any questions on the data memory? Okay. So for example, if we wanted to write to some address here in memory, 0x3, 0x4, our address would come in here as 0x3, and our input to write would be our value that we want to write, 1, 2, 3, 4. So that would update our memory here with 1, 2, 3, 4. And if we wanted to read from an address, say for example, this contained 333, then we supply x04, select our read enable, and our output data would be x0333. So this is also driven by the clock. And it is also rising edge logic. And so here, You have your input address, your inputs are right. And so let's just make this really concrete. So here's my input write line. Here's my address line. And say I wanted to write to address 04, and I wanted to write the value 33. After this rising edge of the clock, if I said, give me the value at address 44, I didn't change it, so 044. My data output line, just put data out, would be nothing here, and then here, it would have the value 0x3 after the rising edge of the clock. Any questions on this? Is that a question? Oh, okay. No worries. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about the register file in detail. So the register file has this capability to do the one that you'll have in for your assignment, has the capability to do multiple reads at a particular time. So you could supply a register number. Say we have some mapping here. I don't remember what the Y86 mapping is, so I'm going to just create one. So REX is 0. 1 would be RBX, 2 would be RCX, and 3 would be RDX. And so if I wanted to read the value that's stored in REX, I could supply the value 0 here to this line, and my read line would come out here as whatever value is stored in REX. So I'm going to draw a picture of this register file. So at 0, I'm going to put the value 0, 1, 2, 3. And at 1, I'm going to put the value 3, 2, 1. And at 2, I'm going to put the value 1, 1, 1. Or maybe FFF. So this is the value at REX, this is the value at RBX, and this is the value at RCX. So when I read this, if I looked at this, when I read at register 0, my output here is going to be 1, 2, 3. One of the unique things about this particular register file is that it has two read lines, so you can read simultaneously. So I can read from both 0 and 1, and my value here would be x, 3, 2, 1, if I'm reading from 0, 1. The register file also lets you write to a particular register. So you can supply a register number with the for the write destination. So I could say write to register 2. And I can supply the data to write to that register. So I can write data 1, 2, 3. And what this will do is it will erase the value at 2, and it will update it with the value 1, 2, 3. It has two write lines, so there's the address line and the data line, and you can do two of these concurrently. So you can write to both 0 and 2 at the same time. And so this would also update 0 with value 3, 3, 3. So any questions about the read and write data lines? Yeah, I'm actually not sure about what happens. So your question is this. So the question is, if you supply two destinations that are identical, 0, 0, 2, a particular, the register file, and you supply two separate sets to the data line. So you supply 0x333 and 0x312. What's the final state of register 0? And I'm not sure. So Normally you'd have race conditions where it depends on which line got there first, but I'm not sure what would happen in your ACL implementation. Do you know?
The test code said, decides arbitrarily that one of the right conditions.
Okay. So Charles was saying that one of the, for the textbook's implementation of this register file, their ACL implementation, they pick one of the lines, the right lines to have precedent. But I'm not sure how it works in, like, what would be the behavior in a real register file. Any other questions? Okay. So these register files are also driven by the clock. So normally on more EE-oriented schematics, you'd see like a little line here and some input for the clock. But we assume that all of these components have the clock. So you can imagine this is your value for time, and here is your rising edge. And so you have your register number as input, say 0, 0, 0, and your value for output, say at register 0, it's stored 3. One of the key things to notice here that's going to be really important is that in the same cycle, the same previous cycle that the value was put on to the register file, that value is available on the lines. So it doesn't have to wait for the next clock cycle for the register value that's read to be available. So this is really important. So let's look at the write lines. So for the register file write lines, you would supply your input here, would be your register number. So say I wanted to write to, so here's my register file, and I wanted to write to register 5, just an arbitrary register. And register 5, I put my register number on this line, and my data that I want to write. So I wait for it to stabilize. Say I want to write 1, 2, 3. Only after this rising edge will my register file get updated with the value 0, 1, 2, 3. But that does not mean that this data input line here doesn't have the value 1, 2, 3. So if I fed this to somewhere else, I could still have that value 1, 2, 3 available to me in my pipeline, even though it hasn't been stored yet in the register file. Any questions on this? Okay. So something important to note here is that the register number 15, if you write to it, the component that will supply lets you write to register 15, but writes are ignored. And if you read from register 15, the value is always going to be 0. So this is an important thing to note here for this example. Okay, great. So now that we've had a chance to talk about registers, let's look at particular ALUs. So things that let us do math on of our inputs. So it's important to note that these inputs are not single bits. They can be 64 bits in case of your implementation. And the ALU takes a select line, and this select line specifies what operation is executed by the ALU. So if the select line is 0, for example, it would do an add. So that would take A and add it to B. So if A was the value 0, 1, and B was the value 0, 1, the added result would be 0x2. Sub, let's say the operation for selecting sub is 1. The value here would be 0x0, 1 minus 1. If it was exclusive OR, it would be 1, 0, 1, 0, exclusive ord, which would be the value 0, just 0, x0. And AND would be 0, 1. So even though this ALU that we're showing here only implements these four opcodes associated with your ISA, modern AAUs actually implement things like shift, multiply, and so they have a lot more complicated operations that they can execute. And ALU designs are even so careful that they design each slice. So they design the operations to operate on the bit level, and that's called a bit-sliced ALU. So there's a lot of VLSI optimizations, circuit design optimizations for ALUs. And if you guys take VLSI with Merchur Stan, you'll get a chance to design a bit-sized ALU, which is great, from the transistor level. So let's take this task, this like think exercise, and try and design a simple instruction set architecture that does add. Particularly, we want to load the instruction memory with a bunch of machine code related to add instructions, and we want to have this execute seamlessly. So any ideas on how we would do this? What state would we need in order to do this? Not in terms of instructions. So we're designing a machine that will execute instructions that we've created. So we want to design a machine that will just execute the add instruction. Any ideas on state? Well, ideally we could consider the carry flag as an extra state, but we want to omit that for simplicity. So in terms of state, right, we're going to have a series of add instructions, so we need some instruction memory to store that. We're adding registers, so we're going to need the register file. And we have a collection of add instructions, so we're going to need the PC. Right? And the format for these add instructions, right, is just going to be a single byte, RX and RY. And the first nibble of that byte is going to contain the value for register that corresponds to register RX. So if we create a simple mapping here, sorry, I pull this over to the side for us so we can see this. So if I create a simple mapping of 0, 1, 2, and RX, RBX, RCX. So the instruction for add RX to RBX and store the value in RBX would look like this, 0, 1. So you might say, well, where's the opcode? Right? We talked about the opcode as being a distinguishing factor, like it lets you distinguish between instructions. Well, we only have one instruction, so we don't need any opcode. Okay, is this clear? So our instruction, so here's our first kind of state. And in this first state, we have our instruction memory, and our instruction memory is byte addressable. So each byte we can address individually. So I'll just label this as 0, 1, 0, 2, and 0, 3. And I'll draw this table here for reference, where we have RX, REX is 0, RBX is 1, and RCX as 2. So if my first instruction, 0, 0, would add REX to itself, my second instruction, 0, 1, would add REX to RBX, and my third instruction, 1, 2, would add RBX to RCX and store the results in RCX. And so that's the contents of my instruction memory here. And I'll have my PC start at 0. I'll just pick that as a default. So any ideas on what we'd have to do? So first, we want to wire our PC to our instruction memory. So at 0, 0, it gives us our first instruction, which is add REX to itself. And this would give us a byte, returns us a byte. 0, 0. Any ideas on what we would do with that byte? Yeah, exactly. We could decode that byte, so we could split it off. So in terms of what that byte represents. So the idea is that the first nibble of that byte represents the first register, and the second nibble of that byte represents the second register. And so ideally, what we want to be able to do is we want to take it and have some mechanism. Remember, these are a bunch of wires, right? Have some mechanism that pulls off all the bits associated with the first nibble and all the bits associated with the second nibble. So 0, 0. So this would be 4 bits. 0, 0, 0, 0. And feeds it to our register file. Anything else? What else would we need to implement this simple adder? Yeah, now we need some ALU to go ahead and do some ops. So I'm just going to draw this in really quickly so we can see it. So the next thing is that we're going to have our values for our A and our B are going to come out. So these are going to be the values that are stored in our register file. So we're going to pass it to some ALU. Do we need an opcode for this ALU? Or do we need to tell it what to do? It's only going to be doing anding, right? So we're going to limit it. So it's just going to be, let's say, 1 for anding. So we don't need an opcode. It's just something that does adding, sorry, not anding, adding. And where do we want to put the results of this ALU? Yeah, we're going to wrap it around, stick it into the right section of the register file. And our destination that we're going to write to is going to be what? It's going to be source B. Because our add instruction adds the value in RXX to the value stored in RYY and adds that value back and stores that value in RYY. So here's our section for that ALU. And here's our wiring up. So let's revisit our register file structure and our instruction memory and kind of go through a concrete example. So say, for example, our instruction memory, which is byte addressable, stores the following. 00, 01. And for reference, we're going to say that RAX is 0 and RBX is 1. And in our register file, we're going to have at index 0 the value 1. And at index 2, the value 2. Sorry. At index 0, at index 1, the value 2. So our PC starts off at 0. It goes to the instruction memory. Maybe I should have done this. Sorry. 0, 0. Goes to the instruction memory. It pulls out the value at 0, 0. That's 0, 0. It splits this. It's going to be 0, 0 here. The register file does the lookup and says, oh, value at 0, 0, that's 1. Remember, reads happen in the same cycle. So this is going to be 0, 1, 0, 1. This does the add. And then the result here that's on this line is going to be 0, 2. And in the next clock cycle, so this all happens in the first clock cycle. And in the next clock cycle, this value on this line, 02, gets added to the register.
So even though we had on the right line the address available, and we didn't
So the question, I'm going to try to draw a timing diagram for your question. So here's the clock. And the question is, what was this right destination line before? So say, for example, the right destination line had something on it. So it was unstable at a particular time. Why, after we supplied, here's our supply value for, maybe I should do this in more detail. So here's our clock. And you guys can see the thing over here. So here is our source line, source A, or source B line, or destination. So I'm gonna, for the, since the destination is the same as the source line, can you guys see that from the diagram? I'm just gonna write dest E here. And our right line, I'm just gonna call right E. And the register file A, that's the result from the register file, and register file B. So here, we had some source file, source value, which is 0. Initially, source B is also 0. And our write line, maybe the ALU hasn't calculated it yet, so it's unstable. So it has something on the line. But as soon as the ALU gets it, it gets set to whatever it's unstable because this hasn't been read yet. So this would be, can't remember what I stored in there, 1. So 0, 1. And second thing that's here is 0, 1. So as soon as it has this, then it can switch over to 0, 2. So the thing to note here is that your clock time needs to be long enough for your lines to become stable. So it needs to have enough time to make sure all the computation comes to an end before the start of the next clock cycle. So that's how you can have some sense of confidence in the value of the line. So this is the problem with overclocking. So like if you overclock your PC, it doesn't have enough time for the lines to get stable, and so then it degrades. So even though it's not stable at this point, the clock cycle is long enough for the ALU calculation to propagate all the way through so the lines become stable. It's going to write on the next clock. Yeah, so the value in the register file, the read value, the value of that output is still the previous value. So even if it's reading, so when it's reading source A and source B, the value that's coming out of source A and source B are the previous register values. I think I understand your question, so, and I think it's really important. So let me see if I can be super clear. The question is, when you're writing to that register, register 1, why doesn't it overwrite it, right? Is that your question?
If we, when we split, after we split, we supply both source B and destination E with the same value.
Yes.
And then the register is going to do something during the clock. Why isn't it going to try to read what's in next because it sees something in E, just like it does?
So E's a write line.
E's a write line, right? So
yeah.
Why doesn't it try to write from next destination at the same time?
So,
even though the ALU hasn't done the calculation yet.
Yes. So this is the important thing. This is the distinction with the, I pull this up really quickly. So writes don't, the value doesn't get stored in the register here until after the next clock cycle. So here, when you have the value 0, 0 on the source line and the value 0 on E for the destination, in this previous cycle, it's the register value is still going to be the old one. And then after the end of this clock cycle, it's when it's going to take, after that clock cycle is when it's going to copy the value on this line into the register file. But as before that, It's not going to do any writing, so the clock ensures the integrity of this register file. So this source that's read is going to be the previous value. It's not going to get copied in until afterwards. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So do we see a problem with this design? What's broken? So if we look at this here, this is the value of the PC. The address of the instruction, each instruction in the instruction memory. Our PC value starts off at 00, right? And so it's going to take the value that's in REX and the value that's in RDX, and it's going to add it. It's going to split it off. It's going to do the addition. It's going to add it. So now it's going to have 1 plus 3, and so the new value is going to be 4 for RDX on the next clock cycle. But what's the value of the PC? So we didn't say. So it could be floating, so it could be anything. And ideally, we wanted the PC to be incremented by 1, so that it would point to the next instruction, right? But we don't have any infrastructure here for adding 1 to the PC. I think what I'll do is, on the second slide, I'll draw a full timing diagram for the behavior of the circuit. Do we see the PC problem? So here's the fix. So we add 1 to the PC, and now we have something that adds all the time. So let's look at an example of this with a timing diagram. So here's the clock. And my instruction memory, I'm going to add 2 bytes to it, 00, 01. And I'm going to say that REX is 0. And RBX is 1. And so to kind of help clarify the previous question, we have our PC. Our PC starts off at 0. So it's all 0 until the first clock cycle. And then we do our split. So our source A and our source B is going to contain the values 0, 0, and source B contains the values 0, 0, and it goes to the register file. And so I'll put in the register file, I'll specify the state of the memory. So I'll say at index 0, it's going to store the value 1. So here, in that same clock cycle, after some stabilization time, it's going to have the value 1 for our A source, and it's also going to have for our B, it's going to have the value 1. And our destination is going to be the same thing as our source B here, so I'm just going to call this DE. And our next value, our rnext, maybe I'll just call it next. Our next value, after some stabilization time, is going to be 2. But our register file during this same clock cycle still contains the value 0, 1. After this clock cycle, when our PC gets incremented, the next value is going to be 0, 1. Our value for source A is going to stay the same. So it's going to be 0, 0. our value for source B, because we're going to read from it, is going to be 0, 1. And I'll store something in 0, 1. So I'll say 0, 1 contain the value 2. So our RA value now, this is when it would get updated. So our RA value is going to have the value 0, 2 in it. And our RB value is also going to have the value 0, 2. And our R next value, after some stabilization time, is going to have 0, 4. So any questions on this? Because this value would have gotten updated after this clock cycle. Any questions? So this clock cycle relationship is really important. OK. Yes, this is when this 0x1 is when we add 1 to the PC. Oh, here? Yeah, so this is going to be 1. So that would be the next. The PC is now going to point to location 1 in the instruction memory, which contains 0, 1 for our value. So there is some delay, but the delay is shorter than the clock cycle. So after it's set, the circuit's going to stabilize. And that's good question. So it's not like a ton of delay, but it's stabilization delay. Think about it as the information has to propagate. But at the end of that clock cycle, it's the same. OK. So let's try and design a machine. So we went through that. Let's try and design a machine that will do jumps. So the whole purpose of this machine is just to do jumps. So any idea on what state we would need? Or first, the encoding, right? So the encoding is going to be really simple. All it's going to be is the 8-byte address, and we'll have it in little Indian form. So any ideas on how we would design this type of machine?
We want to take the input and then instead of passing the end of the ALU to something that's in like the register, we want to pass it to the PC.
Okay, so you're right in that we want to update the PC. Do we need an ALU? Yeah, so we want to take we need two things, the instruction memory and the PC. And then the proposal is, we'll have the PC value look up, so the instruction just looks like, our instruction memory will look like this, where it contains labels. So say, for example, at address 0, it contains, well, I should do byte addressing. So our thing is 8 bytes. So 0, this is going to be 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And our next value, our next address is going to be 0, 8. And then our next address is going to be 1, 0, so 16. Just to be really explicit. So do we see this byte addressable format? Does this make sense to everybody? So we're going to take our PC value. So if it's 0, we're going to read the instruction at memory location 0. So say, for example, in little Indian addressing, this was 10. Those zeros are double zeros. And then it's going to take that value, and it's going to update that value to the PC. So now the PC is 10, so it points to this part of the instruction memory. And say in this part of the instruction memory, we put the value 8, little Indian encoding. Those zeros are double zeros. So now it goes up here. So now it points to this part of the instruction memory. And then let's put the value 0 here. So now it takes the value 0, jumps up to the, updates the PC to 0, now it points here. So now we have a set of loop jumps over and over and over and over again. Any questions on this? So here's that state. And then here's our completed version that just implements jumps. And then here's a cleaner version of that jump example from before. So any questions on this? Okay. All right. So let's talk about a new component called a multiplexer. So you can think of a multiplexer as a switch. So it's a line that lets you do selection from multiple different inputs. So I could put in the select line, I could say select A, and this would take A and drive it to the output. So the output would take the input A and map it to A. If I select B, it would take B and map it to the output, so this would be B. And if I select C, the output would be C. And if I select D, the output would be D. So we can also make the selection just kind of using numbers. So we can label each parts of the mux, each input of the mux, 0, 1, 2, and 3. And then for our select lines, we can pass in 0, 1, 2, or 3 and get a particular output. So if we pass in 0, our output would be A. If we pass in 1, our output would be B. And if we pass in 2, our output would be C. And if we pass in 3, our output would be D. And we can express these outputs as binary numbers. So here, 0, 0 would correspond to 0. 0, 1 would correspond to 1. 1, 0 would correspond to 2. And 1, 1 would correspond to 3. And it turns out that you can implement these muxes with just gates for doing your selection for your bits, A through D. So now, let's think about this design challenge. What if we wanted to implement a machine that did both jump and no op? Any ideas on how we would do this? So you're right. We need to first figure out what the opcode is. So we need some way of decoding the opcode. What happens with the, so in the no-op operation, the PC simply gets incremented by 1. And in the jump operation, the PC gets updated with the label. And so for the no-op, here's our opcode. And for the jump label, here's our opcode, and we have this address. And so we need to make a decision between whether or not the PC gets the address or PC plus 1 for the no-op, do nothing. No-ops will come in useful when you start looking at pipelining. It's bubbles in the pipeline. So here, let's look at the no-op instruction. So any ideas on how we might use mux and so on to design our new machine that is capable of both doing jumps and no-ops? Any ideas? We do need a mux, that's right. We want to look at the output here. So we want to choose between whether or not we use the address that's outputted and feed that to the PC, or we add one to the PC. So PC plus one, that's our plus one little component here. How do we decide what to do? What component, what part of the instruction lets us decide what to do? So we need to look at parts of the instruction memory. So we need to particularly get the bits here, the top, the first byte, and we need to have something that will look at these bytes. Sorry, I should have drawn this with a... that will look at these bytes, and it will split off the first byte and ignore the rest, and it will say, oh, hey, given this byte, here's my opcode. I want to feed it to my instruction. But in addition, it's not just going to take the instruction itself, right? Because the instruction contains the opcode. So we want to take a special part of the instruction, the destination here. So we have our opcode, and then we can take our destination section and feed that to our mux instead. I have a cleaner picture of this. So the first thing is that thing that's going to split off the first opcode section. I see. So it's going to split off the first opcode section, and then it's going to look at those opcodes, and if the opcode was 1, it's going to generate a 0 for a no op to the mux, and if it was 7, it's going to generate a 1. And then we need to also split off our destination address. So take our destination, going to feed that to the mux, and we're also going to feed our PC plus 1 to the mux. And then this is going to in turn come around here and get fed back to the PC. So here's a clean picture of that. So any questions on this? Okay. All right. So yeah, so that's a good question. So the split, so the question is, what is the actual physical design of the split? So there are multiple ways of doing the split. So you can think about it as having some register. These can be built with flip-flops. And you can say this is your first bit, second bit, third bit, so fourth bit, fifth bit, and sixth bit. You can have something that simply pulls off these bits. And then here's your bus line. So you physically like connect those bits from your flip-flops. You can have something that loads it into a register, or loads it into, yes, a register, a series of flip-flops from memory, can be larger. And then you can have something that physically pulls off each of those bits to do your decoding. That's why it's convenient. So now you can kind of see why it's convenient to always have the opcode in the same place, because you can always have those wires connected for that opcode. It just makes building the hardware like so much easier. Okay, so the question is, well, remember when we did shifting? Shifting seemed like a lot, and we were doing a lot of manipulation to pull off the first bit. So this in hardware is a fixed, we don't have control over the instruction memory. So the shifting and stuff was for data that you'd actually store or in variables associated with the program, not instructions that the program is executing. So all those shift manipulations from before were for doing things like masking of actual variables, not of opcodes. But the ALU does implement shifts, and bit-slice ALUs actually just do it by shifting over particular bits. So. Any other questions? So that's a good question. So here, here's a kind of detailed example. I'll make sure it syncs up here. So if it was a new op, and we decoded the opcode, and we had this kind of table that does our mapping for us, right? So it says, if you want to think about this kind of physically, it says, if I matched 0, if my first nibble was 1, then I wanted to output a 0, and if my first nibble was 0x7, I wanted to output a 1. Here, we split it off. It's a no op, so it outputs 0, so it's going to select the first value on this mux. So it's going to take the PC, it's going to do PC plus 1, it's going to select the value for the mux, wrap around, update the PC. If it split off the next one, 7, and the value is 7, what it's going to do is it's going to take this value 7, it will do that decoding, and it will say, oh, the value was a 7, produce 1. You could do this a ton of ways. You could have constants that correspond to the opcode and feed those to AND gates, and so on. It's kind of the first kind of introduction to a controller. So any questions on this? Do we see how this is working? OK, so let's take a challenge on. Let's try and do this. Let's kind of take an iterative approach to implementing these instructions, to getting a machine that's able to do these instructions. So any ideas on the state that we would need? Any ideas on the state? So we're going to need a PC, going to need an instruction memory, holder instructions, going to need a register file, because these do register accesses. And what else does it access? Accesses memory, so we're going to need memory. So here's our state. So let's think about what we would need. How would we need to wire this state up in order to implement the first one? Just the first one. We're not worried about decoding the opcode or anything. What would we need just to implement the first instruction? We do want to increment the PC, so that's right. I guess we could add that. But let's just assume that we're just doing it for one instruction so far. I'll just add that PC plus one here. Say again? Oh, no, we're just going to take an iterative approach. We're just going to build a machine to implement the first one. Yeah, so before we can do that, we have to figure out what registers we need to move, right? So we need to pull in this, we need to read our instruction memory from the PC, and that's going to pull in X number of bytes, right? And it's going to start at 0. So say this was our instruction that we pulled in, so it's going to point here. Then we need to have something that's going to split off the bits that tell it, the bytes that associate with the register. So we need something that does splitting here. And it's going to split off just these 8 bits. And we're going to take the first part of those bits, the first 4, and that's going to give us our first R register. And we're going to take the second nibble, the last 4, and that's going to give us our RB register. So do you want to add to what you were saying now with this new structure? Yep, so now this one has the first value, so whatever was stored in RA. And we want to take what's stored in RA and we want to move it to RB. So what do we need to do here? So we can connect, RB to our write line. So this is our data. What else do we need to do? So yeah, we want to put the address line. So we want to say, okay, for your address line, we're going to write not to RA, right? Sorry. This one, we're taking the data from RA, because that's our from register. And we're writing to RB. So we're going to take the RB line and put that as our destination. So here's a cleaner version. So any questions on this? So this is going to take the result that's stored in RA. It's going to load it into the destination that's specified by RB. Okay. Yes. Yes. So that's a good point. That's why Charles is smiling. Charles, you want to take this one?
Yeah. It's not an error in the book. It really is that way.
Yes.
My suspicion is because it makes implementing pushing up simpler.
Yeah.
But it's not an error. In fact, is a different destination right here.
Yes. So that's a really insightful like observation. Okay, so why don't you guide us through the second one, the immediate move? What do you think we need for that one? So we want to take some immediate and we want to move it into register RB. So the immediate is a part of the instruction, so it's here. So the media is a constant, like 1 or 10, and it's this part of the instruction. So it's encoded in the instruction itself.
Are we adding it on this current state?
Yes, we're going to extend this. Yes, we do need a mux, yes. And we also need to look at the opcode, because we have two instructions now. So I'll pull this up here. So for this one, we're going to pull off the opcode, and then the opcode is going to get passed to the mux. And so in particular, so here, our first destination register is going to be B. So say, for example, the instruction was 03F, and B was 1. And our immediate that we were moving in was 2, well, I'll do a little Indian encoding, 2000000, so on, all the way up to 8 bytes. So this is x02. So we split off our B value, so our B value is going to be 1. And or now instead of writing or result from RA, we're going to take that immediate value and we're going to write that to the register. So here, we need to also pull out our, when we do our opcode conversion, we're also going to pull out some address. And we're going to write, pass that address in to our mux as well. So this would be our value. And depending on our opcode, if it was 3, we would pull out for a destination write. It would ignore all the read lines and just look at the immediate value and then write that immediate value to the register that's specified. So any questions on this? Yeah, so here, this convert opcode box is the, what the question is about. This is going to look and it's going to say, we're just saying that there's some extra hardware that's going to say, OK, if the value was 2, if the value was 2, it's going to be a register. It's a register move. Say this is value line 0, this is line 1. If I have 2, it's going to be a register, register move, output 1 to the mux. And if it was 3, it's going to be an immediate to register move, or sorry, output 0 to the mux. And if it's 3, output 1 to the mux. So a register to register move would get decoded. The value here would be 0. And so 0 would just cause that value to come around, get loaded by the mux, and then stored into the R register. And if it was 1, 1 would get added. And then the immediate start, this part V that gets split off, these last X number of bits, 8 bits, would get past the mux, and then that would get loaded into the register instead. OK. All right. So that we stay in sync with the other class, we'll stop here. And you guys can come back with the remaining 3 minutes.